trust.
How you doing? This is Ray Winstone, and you're listening to Celluloid Heroes. Crack on.
Hello and welcome to Celluloid Heroes Radio Show. My name is Jack and this is Edward. Say hello, Eddie.
Hello.
Pleased to see you. How are you doing?
It's muggy again.
Whenever I ask how you are, you always tell me what the weather's like.
Well, I
want to know how your internal state of mind.
It's bog standard.
Okay, fine. Good answer. What have we got for you today? We've got about five reviews.
Yeah.
We've got a bit of movie news. Not too much. It's been a bit of a soggy week, to be honest,
soggy.
In terms
That's
of film
also how I feel.
Releases. Yeah.
Soggy, boggy.
But, you know, tomorrow we're off to Edinburgh Film Festival, so we'll be seeing lots of good stuff then. But for today, we have reviews of The Messenger, Mother's Day, Honey 2. What was the other one you saw?
I saw Fire in Babylon.
Fire in Babylon, the documentary about the West Indies cricket team of the 70s, is it?
Well, 70s
and early 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. And we also have another film which I watched called Kaboom, which sounds, well, enigmatic, which it certainly was. We'll also have The Stinker and the Stonker. We'll take you through the DVD top tens and see who's going to be seeing the worst film of next week, which I think is probably turning into The Green Lantern.
Yeah.
From what I've heard about it. I mean, from the trailer, we both thought it looks incredibly dodgy.
Oh, yeah.
With Jeffrey Rush's talking penguin, Jar Jar Binks, toilet duck. But we'll start with a film called The Messenger, which is the new film from Oren Movement. And this film, I saw the trailer the other day and I thought, I swear this film came out ages ago. And it did. It was the one film that was nominated for a couple of Oscars in 2010 that hadn't come out in this country. And everyone was like, you know, what is this film? It was nominated for Best Screenplay and Best Supporting Actor for Woody Harrelson. And so it's just coming out this Friday the 17th. I think we might get quite a decent release, but okay. In terms of publicity, absolutely none.
Zero.
It was on yesterday. I went to see it knowing very little about it. So essentially it's the story of two war veterans, one played by Ben Foster, who you will know that from The Machinist that you reviewed the other day.
The Mechanic.
And also The Mechanic, sorry, yeah. Not The Machinist.
No.
I think I made that mistake when you reviewed it the first time.
You might have.
And also 3:10 to Yuma as well.
Which I love.
And he's just back from a tour of Iraq or Afghanistan, it's not actually said, but one of the recent tours. And his commanding officer is Woody Harrelson, who was a veteran of Desert Storm and the first Iraq war. And Ben Foster comes back a war hero. His name's Will. And he gets put into this unit called the Casualty Notification Unit, which is pretty much one of the most horrible jobs that you can get, really. I mean, he lives in a small little barrack army town and he has to go around with Woody Harrelson delivering the news to grieving parents and spouses of people who have
died.
What
a horrible job.
Yeah, pretty horrible job.
What, Woody Harrelson, not Harrelson.
Would you say Harrelson? Harrelson. Harrelson?
Yeah, Harrelson.
Harrelson, okay. Yeah. Maybe that's right.
So I've always said another Harrelson. Woody. Okay, so a Woody.
So as I say, Woody Zombieland. Harrelson... is sort of doing one of those slightly deeper, a bit more gravitas roles that he's actually really good at.
He's a good actor.
He's come a long way from Cheers. And I think he's been nominated for something before. He has a habit of turning up in very small roles and being really good at them.
Keeping on Woody Harrelson, I recently watched Zombieland, but not all of it. I was like, it was on, and I was like, okay, I'm going to flick on because I really want to see this Bill Murray cameo because it's been very much bugging me very much talked about. So I flicked it on, and as I flicked on, they entered Bill Murray's mansion. I was like, this couldn't be perfect timing.
Good timing, yeah.
It was one of the best cameos I think I've ever seen.
Mm. Well, there's one in this, actually. It's not really the kind of film that you would expect a little cameo in. But basically, so we follow this thing, and it's basically a war movie, but you never see any action, you never even see a gun, really.
Right.
So it's all about this very strict protocol that they have when they are talking to these spouses and fathers. They're not allowed to touch them, they're not allowed to engage with them, you don't even introduce yourself. It's really, really well written. There's a bit where they're sort of, he's giving them the lowdown, there's a bit where never ring the doorbell, because some people have sort of you know, tuneful doorbell. So if you get like, sorry, miss, your wife's dead, then it's a bit funny and stuff. And you don't, you know, it seems arrogant to introduce yourself because you want to make it all about them. And so basically they follows them around from door to door and explores the different reactions that these people get. So some people are completely hysterical and just go absolutely mad. Some people will completely take it out on them, like spit in their faces and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I mean, basically it's a fascinating side of it that you never really hear. I mean, you always, it's so, such a cliche in these films of two men getting out of a car with a flag and walking slowly as the mother drops whatever she's stirring on the floor. I think we've seen that in about 10 films. Yeah. And one of the grieving parents that we see is Steve Buscemi, which is his little cameo, and he's one of the people who doesn't take it that well. He goes,
I don't know why I'm laughing, it's horrible.
Pretty mental. And so, you know, it's a horrible job. This guy's a war hero. He's thinking, what am I doing here? And, you know, it's as intense and agonizing as being sort of on the front line, really. And, you know, there's not really much room for sentimentality as far as the film's concerned, either, you know, considering the subject matter, it's not like a tearjerker, but it is incredibly intense and moving. Mm-hmm. And so he is faced, young Will, Ben Foster, not the X-Men United goalkeeper, is faced with a dilemma when he starts to, one woman who takes the news rather well is Samantha Morton.
Yeah.
Who has a young child, and she is sort of like, oh, you know, I realised how difficult this must be for you. Because, you know, that's quite a small piece of sort of, you know,
interaction
emotionally. He sort of falls for her, and he has is stuck with this ethical dilemma of, you know, what do you do? Like, you don't want to appear like you're sort of taking advantage of her grief. She doesn't want to appear like slutty and sort of disrespectful. And it sort of goes, but it's not really like a conventional story arc at all, because it's quite sort of episodic. And the screenplay is great and it is really well written, but it's very sort of hard-nosed and, you know, a little bit like the characters themselves. They have to sort of distance themselves emotionally. And the film sort of does that but not in a way that it's not like it's not engaging, or it's not like you don't understand the characters. It just sort of keeps a distance, but towards a film that someone like a Spielberg might make, for instance. And there's this whole thing of like, this job never gets any easier, and you're very much on board with that as a viewer, because every time they do one of these things, you know, if anything, it's worse every time, and every situation is very different. There's one horrible bit where they go to a Spanish or Hispanic guy, and when they have to go with a translator, and when you do it through a translator, it's sort of even worse. So it's him struggling to dehumanize the situation. He grapples with whether he should, you know, be a little bit more sort of emotionally forthgiving and stuff at his peril. And then the Woody Harrelson part is really interesting, because he seems like a real hard nose, but actually he's just pretty lonely. And he has this thing of being slightly jealous of the fact that he was in a real war and this guy was a war hero, where he basically just went sunbathing in Kuwait and didn't really sort of see much action. There's a bit of a gear change in the sort of second act, like towards the end, and it sort of loses its way a little bit and becomes not boring, but a little bit out of kilter with the rest of the film, and it really needs something to happen to sort of get it back on track. And this does actually happen quite well with the reappearance of Steve Buscemi. But as I say, you know, it's a really nice war film without it actually being a war film, but it has all the sort of intensity and grit of any of the best Iraq war films that we've seen over the last few years. And it's sort of flawed, really, but it's, you know, it's intelligent and fresh and very captivating. And yeah, great performances. I mean, Ben Foster, I had him down as a sort of a nothingy actor, really, but he's really good in it.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's a little bit overshadowed by Woody Harrelson's part. But, you know, it's really great. If you, in a week where there's not much else on, go and see it. I mean, if it's not the film of the week from the films that you've got to talk about, I'd be quite surprised.
Yeah, well,
it's certainly not. It's certainly head and shoulders above the other two films I'm going to talk about anyway.
Okay, well, that's quite interesting. And from the start, the fact that it was released so long ago,
yeah,
and it's only just come out now,
And usually the content, that's a bad sign as well.
Well, yeah. But you know, the content seems interesting. And I do like Ben Foster, so let's hope sort of that's a platform for where he can continue.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all the signs point in that direction. Good. I'm happy to say.
No mechanic, just a bit of money.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to do Mother's Day first? Or?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's get this.
Get it out of the way. Get this
sort of out of the way. But
this mother out of the way.
What I find, while I scribbled that, I try to scribble, you know, just points down when I'm watching films. I don't write, you know, I don't write sentences. I just write words or like one line. It's just to kind of spark my memory when I'm writing. And the worse the film is, with actually the exclusion of Fire and Babylon, the more I write. So I've got a lot written down about Mother's Day. But essentially, it's a remake of a 1980 film called Mother's Day, which I looked up. It's a grindhouse film.
Yeah.
The great trailer. We might well put the trailer on the website because it's just standard grindhouse trailer. It's when they sort of...
Is it like the machete one?
It's called someone like Kaufman. Not Andy Kaufman. Yeah. It's like James Kaufman's Mother Day halfway through the trailer. And then it carries on going, showing more and more repulsive stuff. And then it says it again, James Kaufman's Mother Day. And you know, you watch the grindhouse trailer when they repeat the title and whoever's film is in. Yeah. And the original is about a bunch of lovely, beautiful girls going camping. And they probably like experiment, you know, real, you know, so you got your sex and then you got this gratuitous violence. Where there's basically two hillbillies please their mother. Their mother sort of wants them to sort of rape and murder these girls in front of her.
That's nice.
So it's a horrible sort of grindhouse filth exploitation film. Mm-hmm. So that's where the basis of this remake comes from. But
Is it in the tradition of those sort of remakes of like Prom Night and Last House on the Left and stuff like that? Or is it bringing a little...
Well,
Nightmare on Elm Street was the other one, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think this one, I mean, it's so far in the grindhouse category.
Yeah. But it's this isn't a grindhouse.
This certainly isn't, okay, no. Yeah, so they've really pulled it out and tried. But they've managed somehow to sort of create a new story and a plot.
Okay.
So the 2011 Mother's Day is a bit different. You got basically this house and it's got four couples. The couple who own the house, yeah, and three other couples, and then the one extra girl. Maybe she's having an affair with one of the other men. You'd have to watch it to find out. Yeah. And they're all having a damn good time playing pool in the basement, listening to music, boogieing, having a few drinks, eating some Doritos, and generally having a nice Friday night. There's a tornado.
They are friendships.
Yeah, hard friendships, but that probably won't last. And then there's a tornado nearby, and in their basement is tornado proof, which is lucky. Unless at some point you get kind of taken hostage and that tornado proof room, and then you won't be able to escape. But so they're in there, and then suddenly you cut to a scene of some guy driving away, and then the guy in the back going, "He's gonna die. We're not gonna make it." And this guy being shot. So there's one, and they're all brothers. We turn out,
yeah.
And they've just robbed the bank. Someone's double crossed them. They robbed the bank. Once someone's shot, so they go back to their home, and they didn't realise is that's not their home anymore. It's where these guys live and they're having the party. So they go and crash this poor the youngest brother who's screaming his heart out because he's dying because he's shot and he's on the sofa and like, oh my God, we're going to do it. Where's mama? Where's mother? Where's everyone? And the owner of the house comes out going, what's going on here? And it's like, Jesus Christ, help me. And they chuck a gun to his head and they go, right, this is what's going on. And then they finally phone mother, and mother comes round with her daughter. And it turns out that mother's really been, he's been bringing these three boys up and the daughter to rob banks and be horrible. Horrible people. She's a horrible person. That's the idea.
Yeah.
And she's played
by... A bit like the one in Animal Kingdom.
Well, potentially, I haven't seen it. But I think this is more sick. This is sicker.
I'm sure.
Rebecca De Mornay plays the mother. I'm not going to go through any more of the cast because they don't deserve the credit.
Yeah, sure. I have that problem with the film coming up.
Rebecca De Mornay is the freak from Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Yeah.
So if anything, perfectly suited for this film.
Exactly.
If it was good. So obviously they need a doctor. Luckily, one of the four is a doctor. And that doctor is played by Iceman from the X-Men.
Oh, really?
I'm not going to give his name. I did look it up, but that's called a mice man.
Yeah,
and
sure.
You know, you're there screaming in the cinema. I was like, freeze them all, you idiots. What are you doing? Trying to save this. Freeze him. But he doesn't. What an idiot. So he's taken hostage. Everyone else is sort of trapped downstairs. And obviously the thing is, these three boys are monsters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got Ike, who's the eldest. He's like the responsible monster. And then you've got the middle guy, who is the worst actor I've ever seen in my life. I probably should have named him just to shame him.
Worse than Common?
Yeah, worse than Common, because this guy's only got one style and it's angry.
Okay.
Every line he shouts out, "I'm gonna rape you!" Stuff like that. Ah! His anger sort of translates with into his actions.
Yeah.
So he is horrible. And then, anyway, mother comes down, and basically Ike's broken all of mother's cardinal rules. She's always very calm. It's like, what are my cardinal rules, Ike? It's like, never use the emergency phone and only trust your family and all that. And so, if anything, Ike mucked everything up. One of the doctor's wife tries to run away. She gets shot.
Okay.
Yeah? And whether she dies,
spoiler.
It's not a spoiler, but I will be spoiling this
film.
The
key bit of information is whether she survives, because she gets shot.
Yeah, whether she survives or not. And there'll be other spoilers, which I will probably spoil, because I don't have any intention for anyone to watch this film. So Ike and Beth, who's the wife of the house, she's a bit dodgy. But they're all a bit, they've all got flaws. One's got a toupee?
Yeah.
Which gets ripped off his head, which is quite funny. It's quite interesting. He looks a bit like Wayne Rooney's head. Yeah. He had like a stitch around the front.
He's got a new bonnet.
He does. Like James Nesbitt. But going back, so Ike's got to take Beth to get dispose of this body, as well as get loads of money. So they've got everyone's cash cards, and they've got to get as much money out as possible.
Yeah.
There's also a side plot here that Ike has been sending money back to mother to the address.
Yeah.
But obviously she hasn't been living there, so she's like, "Where is the money?" It's like, "I don't know where the money is."
Yeah.
Says the husband. His knuckles then get smashed in by a pool, snooker balls.
Is this an 18 certificate?
This is an 18 certificate.
Yeah.
I think I tweeted, "Use the worst grammar I've ever used in my life." I actually thought about deleting it. It shouldn't be an 18. It should be like 134, so no one is legible watch it. Because
is the oldest man or woman 129?
About 27, 127. Oh, right, okay. Yeah, so I just had to push it a bit further in case they ever lived that long.
Got to round out.
and, so there's a little side plot. So when they're out disposing the body, getting money, and she attempts many times to escape, but Ike never kills her.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. At one point, he does get fed up with her games. I'm getting fed up with your games, but it doesn't kill her.
Does he shout that as well?
Yes, I'm getting fed up with your games. It's a matter of who's going to survive, who's going to get killed in the most disgusting way.
Any scares in it?
Not certainly not scares.
Is it going for more of a
it's sort of more hostile.
Of a Casino Royale sort? Is it like torture porn?
There's a bit exploitation in that sort of sense. I mean, when someone's head gets blown off, it really does leave a mark. it's not just a bit of ketchup.
Yeah.
And a lot of money has gone into that. I mean, all the characters are two-dimensional. It really is just dull. Completely messed up. Which is what a lot of these grindhouse films were, but sort of take elements of grindhouse films and turn them into sort of, well-structured, 90-minute cans of fun. Really.
Is this longer than 90 minutes?
It's 112 minutes.
And
the mother, she's so horrible. She's such a horrible person. I came out the cinema wanting to kill someone.
The character was well drawn with how horrible she was.
I suppose I did get annoyed at how angry she was.
Maybe
ticked one box. No, it wasn't. No, her dialogue was terrible. I mean, it wasn't like it was a bad acting from her. She's well-established actor.
Worst you've seen this year so far?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I came back and said it's the worst film I've seen. Terrible acting. And you sort of realise, right, the writer's Scott Millam. Yeah?
Yeah.
He's written hardly anything before. And the director's Darren Lynn Bozeman, who directed Saw 2, Saw 3 and Saw 4. Mm-hmm. And you can see them joining arms in their next film, probably later next year, which will certainly be a forfeit for one of us. It's called 90, as in the number.
Yeah.
And it's about a serial killer who wants to kill 90 people in 90 minutes. Let's hope wow. it's no longer than 90 minutes yeah. long, which would be in a death a minute. But he probably plows a few down.
I mean, that is just a pure like studio executive pitch, isn't it? And then they like make the film afterwards.
Yeah.
Get the idea, make the film.
Yeah, and they probably decided how to kill everyone off before they decide who they're killing off.
Yeah.
It's like, well, use a chainsaw, use an ice axe. Yeah. That usually works. We'll suffocate someone.
Yeah, you'd be struggling once you get to about 40, wouldn't you?
Yeah. You would... Yeah, and then you just blow the rest off with a grenade or something.
Yeah.
I was going to say one more thing. The only interesting tip for any sort of kidnappers out there is they use the clean film to tie their people up.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting, actually.
Well, that's clever.
It's quite clever.
It works well.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're taking people hostage and you happen to be in the home and you don't have handcuffs, use clean film.
Yeah. Look as suspicious when you buy it in the shop as well.
No. Well, if you do buy it in the shop, maybe buy, I don't know, some macaroni as well.
Yeah.
Just to make it more, or a picnic.
Definitely get the Tesco value stuff as well.
Yeah. But I don't know, it was generally terrible.
Okay.
It really was.
Well, I don't know, should I do Honey now, or do you reckon Honey after the... I've got two more films to do.
Yeah, I think we'll do a three afterwards.
All right. Right, well, it's time for the movie news.
This is the news.
Surrounding film.
Okay, movie news time. A couple of little stories hot off the press. This, I was coming out of the tube the other day and saw a poster for this. This is coming for the West End after its massive success on Broadway. Have you seen the posters for it? It's called Rock of Ages.
Okay.
Starring Justin Lee Collins and Shane Ward. And it looks
Shane Ward as in the guy.
Shane Ward was
X Factor winner?
I think, or yeah. Pop Idol, one of them. And it was, yeah, I mean, the whole concept of it made me feel a bit sick, to be honest. But there's a Hollywood version on the way.
Really?
Yeah, and starring, I mean, the hell they got these people? Oh, no. Tom Cruise, Paul Giamatti, Alec Baldwin.
Rock of Ages.
Yeah, Catherine Zeta-Jones and Russell Brand.
What? So Russell Brand
You know what it is? It's a musical, yeah? It's like We Will Rock You, and it's like... song like Don't Stop Believing and like We Built the City on Rock and Roll and like all those songs that
probably
are in,
Justin
like,
Lee Collins
Glee and stuff,
did he make
like,
did it was it his creation
no I think it's from Broadway like
so
it
went
it's
from
basically
Broadway.
Mamma Mia crossed with We Will Rock You
okay and so this has been turned into a film
yeah yeah so they're making a sort of I think on the back of the success of Mamma Mia they're going to try and make it like tongue in cheek so bad it's good but if you set out to make something so bad it's good. Like, they probably didn't do that with Mamma Mia. They probably tried to make it good.
An answer we'll never find out.
But, I mean,
the truth
when that comes out, that's going to be a horrible week.
How interesting. Actually, you've just reminded me of my one bit of news, which is sort of... It's completely theatre-related.
Yeah.
It was the Tonys the other night.
Yeah.
And do you know who cleaned up?
I saw, well, the War Horse and the Book of Mormon.
Book of Mormon's... were the winners. I mean, yeah. Warhorse did very
they
well
won
as well.
Nine Tonys.
Yeah, and Warhorse won five, I think. So that's great news because we talked
it's
about
coming
it earlier,
to London as well.
So cannot wait. Yeah.
It's going to be impossible to get tickets.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
I've got
but
a friend who's in New York at the moment, and they every show they have a lottery for 10 tickets, and the queues apparently go like blocks down the road. People are paying like $10,000 for tickets.
Isn't that's fantastic?
Yeah,
that's fantastic great. For Stone
wait.
And Parker.
Yeah,
So well done them.
They've got a few movie ideas knocking about as well. Maybe we'll talk about that a bit more once they've developed.
Yeah.
But anyway, talking earlier of trashy horror remakes, we had the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake a couple of years ago, but there was something wrong with it, I thought. It was only in 2D. So thank God they're releasing a new one.
That is very lucky.
In 3D. It's called imaginatively titled Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D.
Okay.
And starring Bill Moseley, who was actually in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 as Chop Top in that. He's back, but not playing the same role, apparently, because I think he met a sticky end at the end of that one, if I remember rightly. So, you know, that will be one to avoid. Jim Cameron is producing a new film, which, guess what? Do you reckon it might be a sci-fi epic? You would be right to think it was. It's called Myth.
Myth.
So, I mean, hopefully it'll be better than Skakaraka down a cave. What was it called?
Sanctum, which is now on Sky Box Office. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, that was filmed in real 3D, and you can't tell.
There's also, you'll like this, from the team that brought you The Hangover and The Hangover 2.
Part 3?
Yeah, no, it's called Bastards.
And okay, it's Bastards, or yeah, Bastards.
Bastards. Bastards, the word.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. It's not a rude word. It's in the Bible. Two brothers go on a road trip after they find out that their father's not their biological father, but their mum was such a little slag that they've gone on a road trip to find possibilities to see who could be their father.
So it's a bit like
apparently it's going to be a gross out, like grosser than anything.
So it's a bit like Broken Flowers with Bill Murray, but almost the opposite.
Yeah, but I mean, it will be terrible.
Who have we got actors in that? It's Jason Bateman and Zach Galifianakis.
Let's cast it now. Jason Bateman's not really gross out enough for this. Definitely one of them would be Zach Galifianakis. Another one will be
Ed Helms.
Yeah, or that guy who was in Your Highness. What was he called?
Can't write. And
come
can't.
On,
Danny McBride.
Danny McBride. One bit of news which is potentially quite exciting is Derek Cian France, the guy who directed Blue Valentine, which I really liked, is doing a new film called The Place Beyond the Pines. And this is starring Ryan Gosling and Bradley Cooper, who might well pop up in that one. And also Ava Mendez and Greta Gerwig.
We like Greta.
Who we last saw in Arthur, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I like her. She's got a good screen presence. And it's about ex-motorcyclists who becomes a robber, played by Ryan Gosling, who has a big showdown with a ex-cop who's now a politician, played by Bradley Cooper.
Oh, dear.
And there's an incident which sort of evolves into a family rivalry. I mean, there aren't too many details as yet, but you know, might be interesting. Yeah. His last film was very interesting, and Ryan Gosling was great in it. Obviously, he's in this one as well. So yeah, that's about it for the movie news.
Going back to the theatres. This is the news I saw on a poster. I'm not sure you've seen this. It's a film turned into a musical.
No.
Give you any, no, not
oh, a film being turned into a musical.
It's a musical production.
And it's going into a film, or the other way around?
No, it's the other way around. It was a classic film. It's now a musical.
I'm sure I have seen posters for this. What is it? Remind me.
It's Ghost.
Oh, Ghost. Yeah, I saw the trailer for that. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I mean, that, yeah.
Hey-ho.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like Ghost.
Yeah, it's a guilty pleasure.
Right, it's time for some trailers.
This is Trailer Trash.
Okay. Do you want to kick us off with some?
Well, I've been using my source of trailer knowledge.
Not the fruit-based one that I use.
No, not the fruit-based one you use. The sort of more sort of one you'd catch a fish with, as in dot.
Right.
And
Moviebox.net is called, isn't it?
Yeah, anyway. Slash trailers. I just saw a couple of number two trailers, you know, ones you see on the loo.
What, films about poo?
Yeah. No, like Cowboys and Aliens trailer 2. Just a tiny bit more dialogue.
Okay.
You now sort of realise that Daniel Craig will be popping up in the old competition sooner or later.
Yeah.
Trying to play a Western cowboy.
He's actually been quite good with his American
accent. Yeah, he is.
So far.
But, you know, as soon as you start going
regional.
Incidentally,
Samantha Morton's accent is spotless.
Yeah, but
I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, females, our British actresses are fantastic. Usually.
We are. We're a good bunch.
At American.
Although,
accents.
There's one coming up, which is not good.
That's it.
That's it. Okay, I've got a couple from my fruit based one. Dark Tide, which is out today. Trailer's out today. This is from the director who brought you Into the Blue and Blue Crush. Guess what this one's about?
Is it about...
It's about...
Surfing?
Oh, very close. It's about shark attacks.
Okay.
So he's a bit of an aquaphile, this guy.
Yeah.
And this is starring Halle Berry as a unplausibly attractive marine biologist who works with sharks. And a millionaire comes along and says, I want to do a shark dive, but not in a cage. And I'll pay you 100,000 euros, whatever it is, to swim around with some sharks. And some people get eaten. And, you know, it looks pretty dreadful, to be honest. Halle Berry hasn't made a good film for
Oscar
a long
syndrome.
Time. Yeah, very much a victim of the curse of the Oscar. There's a film coming out with Freddie Highmore, who's an ex-child star that people remember from things like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and the Peter Pan one, Finding Neverland.
Yeah.
He's a man now.
Is he?
Yeah, which is quite funny.
How old? He must be like 18,
he's barely 19. Recognisable. He's probably about 17, 18.
Yeah.
Spotless American accent. This is a sort of very indie college romance thing called The Art of Getting By. And it looks quite interesting, you know, could go either way. Looks like it could fall into a trap of being a little bit smug and conceited, but who knows?
Yeah.
There's another film coming out called The Best and the Brightest, starring Neil Patrick Harris, who's quite a big name in America.
Yeah.
He is in Malcolm the sitcom How I Met Your Mother and Malcolm in the Middle. He actually hosted the Tony Awards. But British export Peter Serafinowicz is in it, playing his best friend, and it's about a couple who are very middle class and look at maybe a tad smug, who have moved from Delaware to NYC, and they're trying to get their precious little daughter into a very prestigious private kindergarten school or whatever.
So
apparently his best friend, who's a bit of a layabout, comes up with these crazy ideas to try and get this daughter into a snobby school. I mean, it looks pretty rubbish. And Pariah, which is a film which doesn't let you... it spells out the word phonetically underneath the title, just because people are, oh, they're stupid to read the word. And it's about a very gifted young black teenager who is struggling to come to terms with her sexuality and adolescence and an overbearing family. It's basically like Precious 2.
Right,
But with lesbians.
Oh,
And it looks
I didn't click on it.
Honest, no, it looks very boring. So yeah, that's pretty much it for the movie news this week.
Yeah.
Not much more that I can think of. Beginners, which we had as trailer of the week a couple of weeks ago. I went to see that last week, but we'll review that late when it comes out, which is I think about the 22nd of July, something like that.
Yeah.
But apart from that, yeah, nothing really. So it's time to move on and reveal the winner of this week's competition. Okay, so I'm gonna apologise for making this week's one a bit too hard, really. I think we had maybe a record low, or definitely from the first, maybe when we very first started, but in a run where we've been having such amazing
turnouts,
I decided to, throw a bit of a curveball in there and pick a film that pretty much no one's seen. I'm sorry about that, but, it makes the odds better for the people who actually did get it right. So very big congratulations to everyone who did. I'm just going to get the hat out. Shall I pick this week, or do you want to
pick? Why are you picking?
I never usually pick. Nah. So I would say we've probably got about 10 people, which is pretty appalling. Lots and lots of wrong answers. Well, just play the clip first so you can remind yourselves of it.
I know what Arthur's going to say. He's going to say, I gave you a chance. I put a brush in your hand. I went out on a limb for you, and you're going to toss it away to go and play bass.
In John Lennon's band.
That's the end of it.
So it wasn't to a bass ball, like Ed suggested last week. But that, of course, is Stephen Dorff's awful Liverpudlian accent in the film Backbeats with Ian Hart and stuff, a little biopic about the Beatles and their relationship with Stuart Sutcliffe that came out in the 90s. So sorry that hardly anyone's seen that.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
Doubt it. So I've picked one out. I know who I want to win. I probably shouldn't say that's a bit unprofessional.
Yeah.
But one of our regulars who gets it every week got it this week, and I really thought he was going to win because he hasn't won since we've been giving proper prizes. But unfortunately, he hasn't won. And it goes to Curtis Jackson.
Who has won before, hasn't he?
Really?
It rings a bell, Curtis Jackson.
Possibly. I don't remember writing the address out. It's Curtis with two S's, incidentally, which I haven't seen before.
Curtis.
But anyway, well done, Curtis. And so now, Edward will scratch off your scratch card and reveal how many thousands of pounds.
You could win £100. You could win £25. You very much could win £25.
Two 25s, is that?
You could win £5,000. You could win a fiver. You could win £100. So you really...
Okay, it's not looking great.
You got three chances of winning £100 or £25. Here we go.
Okay. Come on,
£50. £50, £5,000. So nothing.
Nothing. Well, not nothing.
Doesn't stop there.
Not nothing. We've got another prize here.
And while we're on the topic of prizes, I stupidly missed out one of my favourite films, being there. Well, it's not one of my favourite films. It's a fantastic film with Peter Sellers. It was his last last film he ever made. It was on ITV over the weekend, and I forgot to mention it. So I apologise. So by doing that, I've got my own copy right here of Being There, which I'm going to plop in the pillowcase of dreams.
And it really is a pillowcase of pretty much crap at the moment. All the good ones have been taken, so good luck. Please don't get white chicks, that's all we're asking.
Curtis?
You've got
Leon. How many? Have we got Leon, like 10?
Someone won Leon, but they never claimed
10 copies
so,
of Leon.
I mean, that's good. Well done.
Look, we've still got a roll.
Leon, Luc Besson's classic in there. There's two. Yeah, still got the defunct scratch card from the last ungrateful bastard. I'm not going to beat around the bush.
Bastard.
Who didn't actually, with the ER, who didn't claim their prize. So well done, Curtis. You've won the brilliant Leon starring Jean Reno and suspiciously young Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
But for all you out there who didn't win, or couldn't get it, or entered but didn't win, also, incidentally, I'll say some of the names that a lot of people said. Colin Farrell in Bruges.
Right.
In Bruges, Colin Farrell does an Irish accent, and he's Irish.
Yeah.
So to think that an American doing a Liverpudlian sounded like an Irishman doing an Irish accent is, no. I don't know how.
I think it was the bells, wasn't that. It? It was the chapel.
Yeah, maybe.
I did point out that it wasn't a full wedding, so I hope no one put...
Yeah, no one got that. What's the other ones?
Hugh Grant,
I'll have a look through the other ones. Who did, Michael Sheen, someone said. Aaron Johnson, that's quite a good guess.
That's
they were obviously
enough.
Thought
that's very
that
close.
It might have been Nowhere Boy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. Nah. So bad luck. But if you didn't get it, here's your chance to win big. Are we going to announce this one in the Edinburgh show or...?
No,
we'll give people another. We'll give people a full week. Okay, so here's this week's one. Listen carefully.
When I was 8, some men came into my house, killed my dad in front of us.
And I'll take this opportunity to apologise on behalf of this actor to the lovely people of Northern Ireland.
Yeah, and just lock your door, and then your dad will still be alive.
Yeah.
And also, I thought we were going to apologise to someone else for a second, but we shouldn't. And until we reveal the answer.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, that was a real dream to cut as well. Because some movies you have to trawl through and find it. You could have taken any line in this film. It really is dreadful. It was sort of the film that they put quite a lot... I think they invested really heavily in this film to try and make someone in it a star. And it sort of backfired, but he became a star eventually anyway.
Became a star.
But let's not give away too many clues. So yeah, if you think you know who that is, then go to celluloidheroesradio.com/competition and fill in the form there. Or you can also tweet us at mycelluloidhero, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/celluloidheroes and get in touch there. So lots of different vehicles for your answer there.
Hey, this is Philip Seymour Hoffman and you are listening to Celluloid. I forgot it already.
Okay, moving on with the rest of our reviews then. Shall I do Honey first or Kaboom?
Let's do Kaboom.
I'll do Kaboom. I'll save the best till last.
Yeah.
Kaboom. Okay, so this is a new sort of indie art house film directed by a guy called Greg Akari, who is the self-monikered queer John Hughes, he calls himself. So he makes I know that you're quite homophobic and stuff.
Well, that's just not very nice.
Well, what, to call you a homophobe? Or you to say you don't want to watch a film because it's about gay people?
No, I don't want to watch a film by someone who self-titles himself the gay John Hughes. There's only one John Hughes.
The queer John Hughes.
Ah, the same thing. John Hughes
well,
and you're not.
Well, calling yourself the anything John Hughes, I suppose, is a little bit sort of hubristic, if you like these films as much as we do. So this stars a guy called Thomas Dekker, who people will know from that terrible, terrible remake of Nightmare and on Elm Street.
Right.
And he's also in an upcoming film that is showing at Edinburgh, which is called...
90?
No, it's called Angel's Crest.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which looks kind of quite harrowing. He's also done a lot of telly. Most people know him from Entourage, and he was also in Terminator: The Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Ugh.
Which is pretty dreadful. Mm. Alongside him is Hayley Bennett, who plays his best friend called Stella, who was in The Hole, not the Keira Knightley Hole. She was also in Marley and Me.
Was she one of the kids?
Yeah. And he has a roommate called Thor, who is played by Chris Zeitler, who plays Flash in the upcoming Superman, and he hasn't done much. And the only other person in it is Juno Temple, who people will know in this country for... she was in Atonement. She was the little ginger girl in Atonement. Okay. And she's also got quite a major part in the upcoming Batman Dark Knight Rises. And so, yeah, it's the story of this young guy called Smith. That's his first name.
Yeah, and do you get that?
He is in a sort of unmentioned but sort of stereotypical LA college, and he's sort of a little bit sexually ambiguous. He doesn't know whether he's a full-blown homosexual yet. He does sleep with women when he's drunk sometimes, and he has a friend called Stella, who is a lesbian, and she's very spiky, and she talks back to teachers, and she's got an attitude. And he shares a room with this guy called Thor, who is a very attractive. He does look very like Thor. He's a sort of surfer, and he always goes around with a surfboard, despite being in like pretty much downtown LA. And he is a sort of stereotypical macho bloke, but maybe he's a bit gay because he likes things like collecting color-coded flip-flops. And so the plot, as far as there is one, and I use the term loosely, is they just go around having sex with each other for the first 20 minutes, incredibly graphically as well. He's sort of having these dreams where he's walking down a corridor and he goes into a room with the number 19 on and there's a dumpster. What's it mean? He sees all these people. He sees this girl who eventually starts going out with his friend Stella, who's sort of a French girl who turns out to be a witch, and she can make people orgasm by thinking about it and
so
stuff.
Very John Hughes like.
No, not really. I mean, that's the thing. It's an amalgam of sort of like a Lynchian sort of erotic thriller type thing. Very surreal. There's a lot of people waking up from dreams going like, ooh, you know, the way, and, you know, startled in bed. So basically what the plot for the first half of the movie is, people have sex, people walk around late at night and get attacked by people with animal masks. People wake up all of a sudden in their dorm and then they go and have sex with people. And that pretty much goes on like that. And there's some stupid twists in it. And I have to say, like, it's very odd, like, schizophrenic film, really, because there are moments when you're like, actually, you know, this is quite interesting and groovy. But and there are other moments where you're like, this is trying so desperately hard to be hip and cool and in your face and frenetic. But it's, you know, it's very stupid. Juno Temple gives a quite good performance. I mean, there's two characters that are quite similar and they're like sassy and wisecracking, and they don't get on that well, as you might imagine. But Juno Temple, sort of in the first 10 minutes of her on screen, I was like, she has got a dreadful American accent.
Yeah.
And then I realized that it's not actually American accent, it's talking in that really annoying way that like people in like
London,
sort of girls of a certain age do, like in London, who are like a little bit spoiled and bratty.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's immensely grating and annoying. So, you know, maybe a little bit more time should have been spent on sort of refining the screenplay.
Never hated a film so much without knowing anything about it.
Oh, I mean, you would hate it.
Good.
You would hate it. I mean, if you want to see like interesting sort of indie art house stuff that explores like sexual exploration and stuff, watch Heartbeats that I watched a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this has got some really good reviews in certain left-wing broadsheet newspapers that I might read from time to time. But, you know, and it's incredibly pretentious as well. This guy's 18. And
the director?
No. The main character, Smith, and he's doing film, and he's really into, like, Dali. And he says, there's this line about how, you know, film, it's like... It's like studying an animal that's just about to it's about to become extinct and stuff. It's like, shut up!
That's terrible.
You're 18, you're at college, you don't think that.
Yeah.
You're not an 18-year-old. You're some twatty 30-year-old director who's all Hollywood and like trying
to... You think you're the queer John Hughes? Who the hell do you think you are?
Basically, the guy making this film wants to be this guy, but why would you want to be him? Because he's boring and vacuous. And to be honest, when I started this review, I didn't think I was going to hate it, but actually going through my notes and thinking a little bit more about it, I mean, I hate it. I really hated it. I mean, God. There are bits of it where it's like, I'm sort of going for this, but, and then there's just too much. There's this like gay psychological stuff thrown in. There's voodoo witches. There's these sort of Lynchian animal masks. And it's just a mess.
Yeah.
It's a real mess. And I mean, there's a big twist at the end where everyone's in league in this secret organization. It doesn't work at all. There's little bits of it that are like a little bit like that film Go. Do you remember that film Go that came out? A little bit crossed with that, and the like little bits of, you know, the faculty, but without the humor. And it's got it's got explosions in the sky as the soundtrack, and this, and they, but they talk about it loads, and they're like, oh my god, I'm going to that explosion in the sky gig, and it's like, A, explosion in the sky were cool about 6 years ago, and B, like, don't do that, don't talk about what bands you like in a film, because it's only going to date it. Like, it's trying so desperately to be of the moment and zeitgeisty and cool.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit like that film. What's the bit in The Garden State where they're listening to their, like, first generation iPods going like, oh, the Shins, man, the Shins are so cool. It's like, oh, this is a cool live track from the Shins. 5 years on, no one remembers the Shins and no one remembers that film. Good. It's trying to be a cross between Blue Velvet and Eyes Wide Shut and trying to be too intelligent for itself. And it doesn't have the pedigree to be as intelligent as it wants to be. And yeah, I hated it. It ends up just looking like a Katy Perry video.
Okay.
And yeah, he has done a couple of things. He did, he's pioneered the sort of new queer New York cinema sort of thing. And he did a film called Mysterious Skin, which was quite well received. And this is him going back to his sort of comedy roots where he made his name, apart from it's not funny.
Right.
And it's dreadful. I hated it. I didn't think I did before I started talking about it, but I hated it.
Oh, good.
And if you would hate it even more.
Yeah, well, it sounds like...
And I'm sorry. I mean, there are people who I think gave it, like, good reviews because they're like, aren't we cool and liberal and, like, you know... It'll be old men who work for broadsheet newspapers... Like, what, right? It gave it a good write up because they want to be like, it's like when you know, you get those tragic people who go to gigs and stand at the back of like sort of Lady Gaga gigs pretending they like the music. I mean, South Park actually did a really great episode last week about old people when they listen to young people's music, and literally all they can hear is like. Like, it sounds like shit. And then when old people, when the young kids listen to the older people's music, you get like Bob Dylan, but with like over the top. And that's basically the reason why this has got a good write-ups, because old people who work for broadsheet newspapers want to be cool, and they're pretending that they like it. And I'll bet you any money that they don't.
Okay, fair enough. I hope you're right.
God, sweating. Sorry.
Yeah, well, it's soggy, muggy, boggy.
Yeah, and honey too still to come.
Woo. So, I haven't seen a good film for a while. I don't think. If I just flip back from my reviews to Mother's Day. Nah, that was terrible. Prom, self-explanatory. Last night was a bad. Hangover. Blitz was bad. Take Me Home Tonight was all right, so, but not a great film. But I'd say Take Me Home.
A few weeks now.
Yeah, so that's a few weeks. That's quite a lot of films. So Fire in Babylon, because of the lack of releases this week.
It has a cinematic release, but it's also had a simultaneous DVD release.
When it got 2 weeks, 2 weeks after it went in the cinema, it went out on DVD. It's still in certain cinemas now.
Okay,
but it did. They chucked it onto DVD. And Fire in Babylon is about the West Indies cricket team. Which became unbeaten for 15 years. But it's not about the unbeaten cricket team and the unbeaten run. It's about the birth of the West Indies cricket team. And it's far more about West Indies being an independent country as a whole, or an entity. So you start with a bit of background.
Before that, they used to play in their individual islands, did they?
No. It's used to be the West Indies team.
Yeah.
But you'd had to have a white man as captain.
Oh,
and it was still colonized. They only got their independence individually throughout the late 60s, early
70s. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So the history of the they followed the team from when the West Indies, as an independent country, and therefore a black captain, who is Clive Lloyd, who is influential with all the young people coming in, who become the big stars. It sort of starts there, but it goes a bit back. It's all about there's a lot of rebellion. And Babylon is, apart from being, a city, an old sort of...
Yeah. Well, it's the biblical promise, a word for the promised land. It's like Zion.
It's
the rivers of Babylon.
For some people, it's the promised land. Yeah. But for in the Rastafarian terminology, they see it as the Western society. So they don't like Babylon. They want to return to Zion.
Okay.
Which they see.
Why do they always keep going on about the rivers of Babylon? How they want to go there?
It'd be different. Must be a different religion. But no, they were taken. They were taken for. Look, they were enslaved in Babylon. They want to return to Zion. So they see the Western society as Babylon. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the Rastafarian term. And we'll come back to the Western society in a sec. So you've got that. You got brought up in colonial time. Michael Holding sums it up brilliantly in a sentence. He goes, we're brought up in colonial West Indies and we grew up in independent West Indies.
Okay.
So they were brought
up.
For
people who don't know, Michael Holding is a
Michael Holding is a fast bowler. Yeah. And the fire part of Babylon, I mean, it's all about the fast-paced bowlers. And there were four of them. One was Michael Holding, one was Colin Croft, one was Joel Garner, one was Andy Roberts. And they were the fierce and foursome. And that's really the fire. And then obviously on top of that, you've got the master, which is Viv Richards.
Mm-hmm.
The master blaster, as he was known.
Okay.
Yeah. So those are the key players. So we start with our first sort of tour, which was to Australia. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And whilst they're in Australia, they were the best team in the world at the time. And they had Tomo and Willow.
Okay, mate.
Which is Thompson and Willie, who were the fastest bowlers and fiercest bowlers that they bounced it. And this was before helmets and paddings were mandatory.
Mandatory, yeah. Even better.
And so they had they were fierce, and you know they really used to bounce into people's heads and people's chests. Yeah. And the best, I mean, I laugh quite a lot on this because they showed the England team. And if you know anything about English sport, you knew that we were just terrible at everything in the 70s.
Yeah.
Right? Basically, we were terrible. And they show some archive footage of Willie and Tomo destroying these old English people. Like, oh, bloody hell. And getting smacked in the head and going, ow, bloody hell.
Good shot. You got me right in the head.
Oh, I think I'm going to die. All that. So that was quite funny. But anyway, they go, this new independent team of Clive Lloyd, Clive Lloyd in the olden days looks like Trevor McDonald's sort of brother, older brother. He's got the thickest glasses in the world, a nice little tash. But he's like the quiet man, sort of leading his team. Anyway, they go to Australia, and they get completely intimidated by the horrifically racist crowd, the horrifically racist Australian team, and Willow and Tomo just crunch him.
Yeah.
They nearly killed England, as Holding said, and they nearly killed the West Indies there.
Yeah.
And not just physically, but almost the whole team, because they came back from that pretty upset. But then they realised, right, this is how we got to win matches. We've got to be like Tomo and Willow.
Mm-hmm.
So they found that, they sort of shaped this bowling attack, which, as I said, with these four bowlers. And they then became absolutely awesome. And later in the piece, you see they get their own back, not just in Australia. But the other, I mean, in this documentary, England is the enemy. Because they colonised the West Indies.
Yeah, yeah.
And also it talks a lot about immigration and how a lot of people went to England and obviously were treated horribly. Some incredible archive footage of like vox pops of people at the time, English people at the time, asked about immigration and their views, obviously far more right wing. It's sort of very sad in a way that people used to think like that, but also very optimistic that
people can change that much.
Very quickly, within 20 years, and obviously it's not by no means perfect now, but it was quite jaw-dropping to see the sort of
views. Is it archive footage with old interviews, or is it heads with?
Well, this is one of the problems with it. If there were any problems, it's not systematic. Like Senna, as you said, was it 15,000 hours or something of footage, thousands of hours of footage.
Yeah.
This, unfortunately, is slightly too early to have that at your hands have all the archive footage. So you didn't get much. Well, you suddenly get hardly any interviews at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You got limited archive footage of the games. A lot of it was sort of moving stills, and it was all talking heads with the teams.
Who have they got? You had Viv interviewees.
You had Viv Richards. You had all four fierce and foursome.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all West Indians. There's no Ian Botham.
Is it a West Indian made film?
Well, I not sure of Steve Ann, because he's called Stephen with an A, so Steve Ann. So it almost sounds like beer can, Riley. So I'm not sure. I don't know much about him. That he's done sports documentaries before. He did Blue Buds, which was about the boxing match between Oxford and Cambridge. I don't know more about Stephen Riley, I'm afraid. But it is completely West Indian. I mean, the whole film is sort of embedded and sort of underlies with reggae music.
Yeah, yeah.
And every so often you have a reggae interlude about talking about the next chapter or talking a little, whoever it is, I don't know these artists, some sort of reggae DJ, some old guy with just a guitar, sometimes it's a proper rasta.
Mysterious girl, something like that.
Yeah, sometimes Peter Andre. Doing a little,
that's a joke, by the way.
Little interlude about let's say, Michael Holding. You've also got Bunny Wailer, obviously from Bob Marley and the Wailers, who talks a lot, and you've got some very interesting, some very wise rasta whose hair seems to grow out of his house.
Yeah.
But he's got some very interesting things to say. But it's certainly completely West Indian based.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, certainly not biased in a way. They could have gone, considering the archive footage you see, it could have gone.
It's a story about
further.
Them. I'm glad that they did it like that.
Yeah. The last thing you want is like Ian Botham.
Yeah. What didn't they do? Don't they do well?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, Ian Botham go, God, they were so scary to face. Yeah. You know, it's like, I could never get Viv Richards out.
I don't want it. Yeah. Because it's not about sports that. Documentaries can be a little bit sort of middle of the night Sky Sports. Days of Their Lives, or whatever that thing's called. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like that. And as I said, going back to the sort of the fire in Babylon, they go to England, and oh, it annoys me. Tony Greig was the England captain at the time, who's South African.
Yeah.
So, and at the time there, and the massive apartheid in South Africa, so it was pretty horrible times. And he goes,
he was quite a big supporter of apartheid.
Yeah, he's filthy man. By the looks of it, and he said when West Indies came over, it's like, I want to make them grovel.
Ugh.
Which was just the worst sound of it, because as soon as he said that, every one of the fearsome foursomes just wanted to kill him, but with a cricket ball.
Yeah.
And they tried their hardest, and they absolutely killed the England team. This was in the 70s, and obviously because of all the immigration, the scenes must have been, and they got some great scenes of this. Whole Lord's stands completely full of West Indians,
especially the Oval as well.
Yeah, it was the Oval was the big one. Big one, unreal. I mean, it's like
The only places this showed was at the Brixton Ritzy, which
really?
A huge sort of Caribbean.
Sure, yeah. And obviously, you get your Indians and your Pakistanis who fill the cricket stadiums a lot, but this was the first time I've really seen a packed stadium full of West Indians, because they were the voice. You know, they were the show that they could break out of the reason why they love cricket so much. It was their game. It was taught to them, part of training, you know, making the black man posh and
to use
managed.
That and go and,
so again, Michael Holding says,
I suppose that's why everyone loves
it's like
England,
we wanted to say, you know, England, you know, they brought the game to us and now we're better than you.
Yeah.
Sort of thing, which is that's why they were so pleased about beating these guys, and that's really sort of the fire in Babylon, their sort of heart and willingness, the hunger just to prove themselves as equals and break the rule and beat the world. So it doesn't, they were unbeaten between 1980 and 1995, but this ends this ends in 1984 when they go back to England, kill them again. It was a whitewash, and all the West Indies called it a blackwash. Good play on words there. And it was then when you had your Bothams and your Gowers in the team, and the sort of cultural exchange came apparent, and they actually became, cricket became the winner. It was a great series, even though England got trounced, you know, they were respecting the cricket rather than anything else. So that's where it ended.
Good stuff.
But in terms of going back to center, it's not a cinematic film, really, because of the lack of archive footage.
Yeah.
Because a lot of talking heads.
Does it feel more
heads.
At home on DVD?
Yeah. Just you know, hopefully it will be commissioned sooner or later on a Sunday evening, a real 9 o'clock slot on BBC Two, and that's when you want to watch it. But, you know, really interesting, very interesting. If you don't really need to know much about cricket.
Is it one for people who don't like cricket?
Oh, yeah, because it's not, the essence of the film is not about cricket. It's about independence and equality. And also, I mean, the only cricket you see is you see Viv Richards smacking it out the ground, which is great for anyone. Smacking Willow and Tomo out the ground, with these incredible. And then the scene, I mean, the pain. They show some of the bruises. And wow. You know, they wanted like people the fear for their life rather than fear to get out.
Sure.
So really, really interesting.
Okay.
About time.
Best film you've seen in a while, would you say?
Best film I've seen in this new book.
Really?
No, because I saw Attack the Block in this.
Okay.
Attack the Block was, I thought, slightly better. But, you know, considering my poor run of form, that was a nice sure. breath of fresh air.
Okay. Well, talking of poor runs of form, Honey 2.
Yep.
My forfeit for this week. I'm going to do this very quickly because we're running
out of time. Did you see Honey before you saw this? To get
no,
move.
I did not.
Oh, that's a shame.
I did see.
That's probably why you didn't like
I
it.
I have seen bits of Honey. I've probably seen about 35 minutes of it because it was just on TV. Maybe my sister was watching or something.
Right.
So this is Honey 2, directed by Billy Woodruff, who directed Honey 1. And he also directed the only other film he's directed, Bring It On 3, which went straight to DVD.
I saw Bring It On.
That's I don't
got
know whether
Kirsten Dunst in it.
Yeah, yeah. The third one's quite like this. Like, absolutely no relation to the original whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, this, to the Jessica Alba 2003 dance flick, I mean, apart from almost stealing the plot, it had nothing to do with it apart from one tiny little thing. So it stars Katerina Graham, who was in The Roommate. You'll know her from The Roommate.
Which one?
She's also in The Parent Trap. And two other people, I'm not even going to mention their names. A guy who's just called Mario. He's cool enough to just be called Mario.
Oh,
apparently,
an actor.
He's quite famous.
Is he?
And he plays
himself.
He's
probably a singer. He
plays himself. No, he's a dancer.
Of course. Of course.
And so Katerina plays Maria, who is just come out of juvie. for breaking
stabbing someone in the eye with a biro.
Yeah, no, breaking and entering, but it wasn't her. She took the rap for her friend because she's so lovely. Well, and as so part of sweet. Her community service, she's also a really good dancer. And it starts with this incredibly like tooth grinding dance number in a in prison.
Did they break dance out of prison?
Not quite like that,
that's
but almost as bad. And as part of her community service, it's quite lucky. This she is the janitor in Honey's old studio. So Honey's gone off to make
that
it
is
big.
A stroke of luck.
It is.
It must
it?
Be
isn't it?
In Coincidence City. This must be set where
exactly,
prom is set.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it lucky. Is. Yeah. And so she sort of works there. She has a sort of ex-boyfriend, bad boy, this Hispanic guy called Louis.
Mario.
And he's sort of like, very, don't even go there, like sort of real stereotype. And but she's sort of got her eye on this guy called Brandon, who's this sort of pretty boy, Texan, southern dandy kind of guy. And so, yeah. I mean, talk about like riddled through of cliches. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It literally is. Like, I mean, there's this sort of like, oh, we can't do the dance contest because I got my big exam. And it's like, well, you got to do what's more important to you, blah, 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 blah. Lots
she,
of like,
she does
that,
both.
Like finger wagging head, like, oh, yeah. No, you didn't. Like, sort of, you're going to get served. Like, all of that sort of like challenging people to dance off. There's another team who are a bit of bastards. It ends in a big talent competition, what a surprise. And you know how these character competitions work. It's usually someone who needs, we need £8,000 to save the old dance hall or something. Look, a poster for a competition with £8,000 prize money. I mean, it's not quite like that, but it's as bad. And so they have these dancing competitions and the other team do a dance in a sort of, Maria gets her little crew and the other dance competition, they're a bit evil, they play a bit dirty. They do one dressed as school children, which is a little bit suspect. You might get some people in the back of the cinema panting a little bit scarily loud. There were three people in the cinema.
Demographic?
One teenage couple and one suspiciously old bloke on his own.
Bearded man.
If he wasn't a critic, then he was an odd man to avoid late at night. Mm. And so it springs into these dance numbers like with less subtlety than a musical.
Yeah.
And there's lots of them just getting like, you know how they do in High School Musical, but this isn't really a musical sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there's one where they do a dance in the Tron outfits.
You can get away with doing silly dances out of the blue in musicals, but when you're doing a film, a straight film,
and they're also also dreadful. I don't know much about collective dancing. I mean, I've seen that group that won Britain's Got Talent or something. Those people look a lot better than this people. And how interesting can it be just flipping around for 2 hours, pretty much?
2 hours? Ooh.
Yeah. It's just under 2 hours. And, you know, it's also very very sort of 90s as well. Like, this is a film that's been done about 100 times already, but
about three times a year.
It doesn't seem modernized at all. Like, it's still the same language that, like, you know, oh, he was mad, you know, pissed off with you or whatever. Yeah. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So basically it's building up to the battle zone, which is the sort of thing that's, and it's televised as well. I've never seen a dance competition, like a one-off thing televised,
not
on
one-off.
Telly ever. When's it ever happen? And so, yeah, I mean, it's just completely riddled with cliches. What it reminded me of after the first like half an hour is, did you see This Is It, the Michael Jackson thing with all those really annoying dancers who are like, oh, I've come all the way from Kentucky and all I want to do is meet Michael. It's like, and then you watch them rehearse. That's what it's like for 2 hours, but the people on this are more annoying than those people.
Yeah.
And they sort of, you know, this Mario guy, he's like, you gotta have something else to put into your dance to make you win or whatever. And yeah, so she apparently put something, despite the fact that all the other bands in the dance troops in the competition look better than their one anyway.
Yeah.
And they sort of do this one that's supposed to be mind-numbing and blows everyone away and gets 10 out of 10 standing ovation thing at the end. And it's like, that was exactly the same as the one you did in prison at the beginning. If anything, it was worse.
Yeah. Did they have to do like some sort of special skills, like a triple backflip? No one's ever done it before.
Oh, no, they was missing that one. They just sort of definitely should have done
it
anyway.
Can't do it.
So it was just smacks of everything you've seen 1,000 times or more. I mean, it was boring. It was sin. And how it didn't go straight to DVD, let alone get made in the first place, yeah. I have no idea. I mean, if it wasn't for the first one, cashing in on that one, because I think the first one actually did quite well, because Jessica Alba was quite up and coming.
Yeah, and it was one of the first dance films, you know.
Yeah, and now you have Save the Last, yeah, all of that. And it's just utter garbage.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was good. A good forfeit, well done.
Good, well, you know... looking back in hindsight, I don't know what would have been worse.
Well, that was the worst of the year so far. I mean, thing is, it wasn't as boring and soul destroying as Pirates of the Caribbean 4, but it was, as a film, it's the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, it's terrible, terribly made, terribly shot. Even the lighting was terrible, and it was terrible editing, terrible directing, terrible acting, terrible, terrible, terrible. Even the choreography. You would think the one thing to get right with the dance movies to make the choreography good, but it was crap.
Well, anyway, so two contenders for worst film of the year there, Honey 2 and Mother's Day.
Exactly, yeah. What should we do now? Should we do the Stinker and Stonker?
Let's go Stinker Stonker.
I'm Stonker. I'm the Stinker. What's the Stonker? Mr. Stinker.
Excuse you, Edward.
Sorry about that.
It's a fart joke for you. The
toilet humour.
Yeah.
Stinking stonkers.
Okay.
Stinking stonkers. So almost sort of... Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's rattle through them.
Stinking stonkers. Okay, very quickly. I don't have many. I did this last minute because I forgot to do it properly.
Yeah.
So what do you want first?
Let's go with the stinkers first.
So stinkers on Wednesday at 9 o'clock on E4. So you can miss this at 10 o'clock on E4+1 is Alien versus Predator, or AVP.
Yeah, okay.
And then on Saturday at 10 o'clock on E4 is Employee of the Month, the old Andy Dick film. 10:45 on Film 4 is Jason X.
Oh, dear.
And Sunday at 10 o'clock on Channel 4 is Hitman.
That's terrible as well.
At 10:50 on Channel 5 is Secret Window with Johnny Depp.
Okay.
And at 11... PM on Tuesday on 5 USA is Mission Impossible 3.
Okay, Mission Impossible 3. That was a very struggling for 3 hours, that one.
Yeah.
It does have one of the best lines ever in it.
What?
Do you know the bit when he goes, Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall, and then jumps off the wall?
I know.
It's really weird. It's the most out of place thing. He's like, he's climbed up a wall with all his grappling gear, and Tom Cruise is sitting on the top of the wall, and he looks directly down the camera and goes, Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall, and then falls off the other side, and everyone in the cinema just went, what?
What's that?
But, you know, that's not the worst.
Improv time.
Probably
improv.
The worst. I mean, the one I hated the most was AVP, just because I had a sort of, I mean, stupidly, I had some sort of, you know, hope for it.
Yeah.
But it's terrible. Apart from Ewan Bremner's in it, I like
Ewan Bremner. Yeah, and he gets killed in a horrible sort of way.
Yeah. So that's my personal worst, yeah. Should we do Stonkers?
So Stonkers, on Friday at 10 o'clock on 5 USA, is Sir Sevenon, or Seven.
Okay.
If you put a V instead of a seven, it would make spell seven.
Yeah.
10 p.m. on More 4 is Godfather.
One?
The Godfather.
Yeah.
11:50 on BBC Two is King of Comedy.
Ooh, I love the King of Comedy. Mm. Three really good ones so far.
9 p.m. on Film 4 is Taken.
I'm not even going to dignify that with a response.
It's good. Saturday, 9 p.m. on ITV4 is Dirty Harry.
Okay, that was on last week as well.
Sunday at 10:45 on ITV is Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, and good week.
10:35 on ITV on Tuesday is Inside I'm Dancing. Okay. So I sort of put on there because I know you liked it. I haven't seen it. In fact, if I'd taken it off...
There were a couple, and I never usually see you doing these, but there were a couple where I was like, that's definitely...
Well, no.
Like, you disagreed. Look, what were they?
Vera remember. Drake and The Changeling.
Changeling. I really like Changeling.
Yeah, it's cheesy.
Anyone going back to this one. Dirty Harry I watched this week, actually. It's hard to watch Dirty Harry without thinking, oh, it's such a like cliche thing, but it's not actually, because every cliche starts somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Dirty Harry is.
Exactly.
Despite all the quotable stuff that you remember, it is a bit of a sort of like white right wing nutter's wet dream, Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
But I didn't enjoy it as much as I remembered. But Seven Godfather, I mean, I'm going to go with the King of Comedy.
I'm so glad you did.
It'll be one that not many people have seen.
No, you've got to see it.
For me, I could be quite tempted to say it's my favourite De Niro role in anything apart from Taxi Driver.
Yeah, but yeah, because you've got to say, I mean, it's such a unique
amazing.
Film.
Amazing.
Scorsese's
most like idiosyncratic as well. Like.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Really like it. Okay, well, so that what remind us when that's on?
So yeah, King of Comedy this Friday, 11:50 or 10 to midnight on BBC Two.
Okay, so make sure you catch that, people.
Yeah. Oh, I will be on iPlayer for the week. My asterisk.
Okay, yeah.
No Obelix this week, okay. But just asterisk is Maverick.
It's going to be lonely.
The old Western family film with Mel Gibson.
I haven't seen it.
It's a bit of a family romp.
Oh, really?
With Mel Gibson and Jodie Foster, which is the reason
good
I put
racist
it...
racist romp.
Well, and the reason I say that is obviously Mel... The Beaver's coming out soon, yeah. And you've got Jodie Foster and Mel, that's
what
they
met. We'll have a review of The Beaver for you next week.
Yeah, so yes, that's why I put that there.
Okay, all right then.
It was a question on your lips, and now it's dribbling down your chin. You simply have to know, or you'll be straight back on the gin. The coronet is zeitgeist of the room that we are in. What's in the studio bin?
Is it chicken?
A chocolate bar wrapper, a can of pop, sort of general litter.
What's in the studio bin?
Okay, welcome back to Celluloid Heroes Radio.
Hello.
It's time for the DVD Top 10.
Yes.
So, obviously, I think there's going to be a bit of a shake around because there's a few big releases out this week.
Yeah,
so number 10.
Taken's dropped out.
Yeah, it's 100th and 11th week in the charts.
It will be back in.
Of course it will be back because idiots like you keep buying it.
I buy one every week. Number 10, Gulliver's Travels.
Neither of us saw that because it came out on Christmas Day and we were on holiday.
Yeah, Just Go With It came out with all the other Oscar films, so we were a bit too busy then, luckily.
Yeah, Inception, which is enjoying its renaissance, prolonged renaissance, is down one from number 7 in at number 8.
Due Date, which is, in terms of comedy factor and good feel factor, is just wedged in between the Hangovers. Just so you can put them in chronological order in terms of how good they are.
Number 6 is actually falling faster than I would have thought.
Yeah, but
it's down from number 2. It's The King's Speech.
Number 5, Tangled.
Yeah, which is great. Really great. A nice old school Disney film with some good songs and some great voice acting.
Yeah.
From people who aren't celebrities.
Yes, exactly.
In at number 4
is The Hangover.
Which we disagree on.
Yeah, we do.
So, you know, Ed likes it, I don't. Number 3, 127
My favourite of the Oscar nomination films.
Really? You would have had this for Best Picture, would you?
Yeah. No. Best Director.
I would have had Inception for Best Director.
Yeah, yeah, but it wasn't nominated, was it?
No. Nor was Danny Boyle.
No, he wasn't. No.
But yeah, really good. It's good second time round as well.
You had your query about what to watch on the train. With two films or four episodes, you've gone for a book in the end, have you?
I've gone for two graphic novels and a film. Yeah.
So what I'm going for is I'm going for Black Swan because I haven't seen it. Like I said. So my toying was seeing another film I haven't seen or revisiting one I have. And 100 Turns of an Hour is one of them, and Pool was the other one. So I just don't know. I mean, after Black Swan, I imagine I want some light relief.
Exactly.
So maybe 127 Hours isn't great, but then it's one of my favourite songs.
I think that 127 Hours is pretty uplifting, to be honest.
Well, yeah, it's very uplifting.
I skipped out of this.
Oh, so did I. Yeah, and If only we were still playing music, we'd get that Sigur Rós song because it's a fantastic song.
But we did try to play it, but it was about 15 million minutes long.
It's long. It's 9 minutes long, but you can just put the...
Another new entry. All new entries in the top three. Number two.
The last two I've reviewed, the top two. I'll go through them both. The Mechanic, the Jason Statham and Ben Foster and Donald Sutherland. Yeah. And Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, very important.
Trying, shortlisting maybe for the AND Award at the end of this year. But he's not quite in there at the moment. There's some tough contenders this year.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Zane has something to say about that. Yeah. It's trashy. It's trashy Statham.
Tongue-in-cheek and fun, or is it?
No, it's Ronsel. It says what it does in tin. And
number one,
the star-studded Romeo and Juliet, which is going to be a massive UK hit because it's completely UK cast. Elton John's sort of basically
self-indulgent vanity project
was the perfect way to describe that. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, avoid that. Righty-ho. Let's do the Quizmaster then, shall we?
Two men, one film. Who will see it? The Quizmaster will decide.
Okay, it's Quizmaster's question time. That time of the show where things get a little bit hairy, palms get a little bit sweaty.
Well, we're already drenched in sweat.
Exactly, yeah.
Because
but
of the soggy, bogginess of the
Hello, day. Quizmaster. How are you doing?
Hello, Quizmaster.
Hello.
You sound like a bit jovial this week.
Hello, Ed. Hello, Jack.
Hello.
Hi, Quizmaster.
You're getting some from Mrs. Quizmaster.
Oh,
excellent. How are you doing?
You missed that one. Yeah, great, mate. Thanks. Can we have a question, please?
Yes. How many films has Samuel L. Jackson been in?
All together. Okay, you got 30 seconds from now, Edward. This is feature films.
Feature films.
Yes, feature films.
Does it include Virgin Media and Barclaycard adverts? right.
Edward. I just, you got to put a random number. He's a very young Samuel.
I mean, these
Jackson,
Marvel ones, like he pops up in all of them, and they all count. So I reckon his career is about 30 years now, almost, maybe more. We've got a couple of seconds left. If you want to do a little bit of last minute tinkering, that's it. Time's up. Do you want to read yours out first?
Yeah, I went for 34.
34. Okay, I've gone 55. That's way too high. That's way too high.
It's 107 films.
Wow!
So I'm seeing the Green Lantern.
Yeah, brilliant.
Great.
Great stuff.
That's rather interesting.
After Honey 2 and Kaboom all in 1 week, I'm happy with that. Thanks very much, Quizmaster. Great question.
Good question.
Bye.
Okay, there we go. So Green Lantern for you next week. Got a lot of films to see this week, haven't we?
Yeah.
We've got five a day at the weekend in Edinburgh. Ones we're looking forward to include Page 8, the new BBC-funded film with Bill Nighy and Rachel Weisz and lots of other cool English actors. Project Nim, the new film by the guy who made Man on Wire about a little monkey.
Yeah.
They're always fun.
And I've got Trollhunters, which I talked about a few weeks ago.
Looking forward to that. Norwegian horror comedy.
Yeah.
There's Perfect Sense, which we have mentioned before, with Ewan Bremner and Ewan McGregor and Ava Green, which is a sort of sci-fi thing set in Glasgow. And yeah, lots of other exciting stuff. So we'll have a special show for you with some special guests, maybe a few interviews, maybe a bit of roving reporting, who knows, from a different country altogether. So it's very exciting.
Yeah.
So tune in for that on Saturday. Should we just end with any other business, any telly stuff?
Yeah, we're talking about Shadowline.
We've got one more episode tomorrow, which I'm going to be in Edinburgh, so I probably won't be able to see that.
So finally, I'm actually overtaking you because I watched two episodes.
It's been a bit of a tug of war.
Yeah, so I'll probably win that battle.
We're back with that. But if you film fans, if you haven't been watching Paul Merton's Birth of Hollywood on BBC, they're all on the iPlayer and they're really fantastic.
They're
actually
so interesting.
A proper portrait of the original Hollywood stars.
100 years ago, there was nothing. It was
all
this orange tree.
Amazing characters like Cecil B. DeMille, I didn't really know much about. And Roscoe Arbuckle. In the third episode, there's a great thing. Have you heard about the sort of downfall of Roscoe Arbuckle? It's really horrible.
Yeah, that was the second. That was the second. Was that the second why I ended it.
So they're filth. Highly recommended. Also on iPlayer that are being repeated. If you missed them the last time round, are Mike Gatiss's History of Horror.
Yeah, which is great.
Which that's another three-parter, which is really great. So check out.
And that. Luther. I mean, did you watch the first?
Yeah, I actually. It's funny, Luther, because I remember it being a bit of a guilty pleasure, and my brother really likes it. So we downloaded the last episode of the last series to sort of remind ourselves. And it's brilliant. It really is. Yeah. I mean, it's full of cliches, but Idris Elba is good enough to pull the whole thing
and
along.
Then you got Paul
and
McGann.
It really works. And it's quite spooky. Paul McGann's great. And yeah, it's really good. I really enjoy it. So I mean, it's a bit of a guilty pleasure.
On Tuesday.
You have to break down your sort of wall of cynicism. But this is only four parts now because the BBC is obviously tightening the drawstring in every department.
They're two-parters, I think.
I think that's probably what they'll be, yeah. But it's great, and if you like Idris Elba, you'll like it very much.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty much all we got time for.
Oh, and obviously the biggest television event of the weekend is the US Open.
Oh, come on.
Who have you backed?
No, we're not talking
about... Who have you backed?
Shut up. right, we'll just give you one last chance to listen to this week's accent clip.
When I was eight, some men came into my house, killed my dad in front of us.
Okay, there you go. So if you think you know who that is, go to celluloidheroesradio.com/competition and hopefully we'll have a few more right answers than we did this week. So congratulations to Curtis who won this week, and we are left with nothing else but to say goodbye, and we won't see you next week. We'll see you on Saturday. So that's exciting. You only have a couple of days to wait till our next podcast.
Wow.
We're Billy in Edinburgh. We're looking forward to hear you joining us there. Yeah. Have a great week and we'll speak to you soon.
Nice.
For all the latest movie news, for previous reviews, or to get in contact with the show, visit celluloidheroesradio.com.